condition, my condition was him.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Arnold. It's Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 1175. NASDAQ Futures up 26. And as for a station report, we still had to come through a military checkpoint, although we weren't stopped. This must have been an old truck, though, Matty, because it was the old camouflage green, not the new desert camouflage. So I'm going to say that truck was older than me, but just saying. And our building, of course, is still boarded up, so we had to sneak in the back way. This is the America we come to love, isn't it, Kevin?
Yeah, did the Secret Service car, did you just tell them you were Secret Service and then got
well,
in?
Well, I'm just hoping we don't get a protest down here because my police plates and my Secret Service car might not be ignored.
it might become a target. Have you boarded it up?
I could.
Can
I should
you
have
board up
it
the windows on that beast.
I could. I just board up the whole car.
Put it in a box.
As a matter of fact, talking about a story. There was a guy over on the west side. This is years ago, and some bleep. I don't know if the bleep was male or female. Used to come park on the guy's property like every day to go to University of Illinois. It used to be Illinois at Circle. Now it's what? What's the official name of it? University of Illinois Chicago.
UIC. Yeah.
So one day the person comes back and the guy had a whole bunch of extra brick. He bricked the guy's car in. All around, all four sides.
Nice.
Now that's tough to get out of. Just saying.
It's a tough parking space. Yeah. That's the kind of thing someone would do if you in the city in the neighborhood if you parked where somebody else shoveled.
Most I ever saw there was the hose out and just freeze your car in. Put like a foot of ice on the thing. I've seen people do that.
Yeah, that could be fun. Yeah. The story I heard, this guy, his girlfriend had moved to Chicago, and so she didn't know the Chicago street rules when it came to shoveling. And so she unknowingly parked in somebody's spot, and her windshield got broken. And... So nobody knew why. It was just her windshield got broken. She comes back in the house and said to him, crying, you know, my window's broken. I don't know what to do. Well, here, take my car, go to work. I'll take yours, and I'll go get the window fixed during the day. I have time during the day. So they did that, and then the next morning, after she had returned with his car and he had gotten hers fixed, they came out in the morning and his car's window was broken because she parked in the same place.
God. Well, you know, sometimes. They didn't explain it to her exactly the first time, as they say. You know.
Well, they didn't know why the first time. They pieced it together the second time.
God. Well, I don't know if you listened yesterday, Kevin. It's stunning to me. I was talking to Maddie that the same thing that people are accusing people of... is what by doing you do you end up by doing the same thing. I mean, you're accusing like every white policeman of being a racist. Okay, that's you're accusing them of judging all black people the same way by judging all white people the same way. I don't know how you get anywhere doing that as a country. It's
well, the world has gone mad this year. There was a really funny tweet. If it's still available, or if it's still at the top, I'll retweet it for the listeners. But it shows this guy walking down the street. It's one of those, you had one job types of things that I subscribe to for a little comic relief. And it shows this guy walking down the street, you know, fat guy thong. It's just a really ridiculous picture. And it said, if 2020 had an album cover.
God, yeah. When I was younger, it seemed like, Kevin, we read a lot of history in high school and college, but I don't know if we were just going too fast or people didn't pick up on the real stuff until you kind of read stuff again. You know, I always go back to my mom's most famous quotes, at least in terms of my knowledge. Not that anybody else cares about what anybody's mom said, but I remember her saying that first time she watched Gone with the Wind, all she thought about were the parties and the dresses and stuff. And the second time she watched it when she was 35, all she saw were the wounded and how bad shape they were in. And she goes, I didn't care about the dresses the second time I watched it. All I cared about was the people that were shot up. And how you get an amazing, I know the first couple times I went to see and saw the movie, I have it at home, VCR, we're going to call it, about Hoover Dam. And the first couple times, all I saw was this amazing construction project and how they put it all together. My mind was just, my God, how could guys envision this whole thing and make it happen? And only about the fourth time I watched it, all I saw were the people that got there a year early and were living in that heat down by the river with, like, water racing by where you couldn't even almost use it, and babies in people's arms in these tents. And I'm going, wow. You know, you see things. But the history you read about, you know, our country, and it's always this, hey, you know, we're these kick-ass Americans, and no matter what happened, we came out smelling like a rose. You know what, Kevin? You go back and read this stuff in detail. We barely made it a couple times. Barely made it. And we could just as easily have gone the other way. I mean, the Depression, there were a lot of people that were smart people really questioning whether or not our system of government and our system of... When Roosevelt got in, I don't think he questioned the government so much, because people had pretty good opinions of him. But the economic system, and it was not a universally gone conclusion that we were doing the right thing. And one of the things that I would like to do, if we ever get time, is I'd like to, if I could, you know, stop the world for about a month, I'd like to read an awful lot about the Revolution, because it's one spot I haven't read about. And the more I read, I've been trying to catch up. The more I read that if we didn't have George Washington, it was such an incredible talent. I mean, everybody talks about, Eisenhower and people like that and the great generals. Well, yeah, they were, to a certain extent. I'm not, the more I read about Ike, the more I'm not so sold on him. But, a guy like, what's his name? George Marshall, I think, was a spectacular talent. Those kinds of things. But nobody had to somehow raise money, buy mercenaries, and have people quit on you because you couldn't pay them and stuff. I mean, Washington had 90 bazillion problems that those other guys never had. Not even close. And somehow I'd love to read detail on that, because I never have, because I'll bet it's probably the most, matter of fact, I got this thing in the mail last week, or email, said, who is the most amazing general in the history of the U.S. And the answer was, it was like a two-page article, if you ever think it's anybody other than George Washington, you're out of your friggin' mind. I mean, the guy had to raise the army, pay the army, deal with the British versus the French on the side, you know, I mean, and then he had Indians to deal with too. I mean, we're talking about like four-front war, and he's paying for the guys himself, and half the guys didn't trust him if he didn't come up with the paycheck the night before the battle. I mean, it's not even the same planet as the stuff people are normally dealing with.
Yeah, he had no chance to win. No chance whatsoever to win.
And yet, I did a survey, I should have known this, read this thing on British, the British, of course, have managed to fight everybody for the last how many hundred years. So they had this survey of British, military historians and personnel, and they said, who was the toughest general unit went up against. It was like unanimous, Washington. I mean, nobody else could have pulled that off.
Well, because you have to be so many things, too. You know, I mean, you described everything, and you still have to be a really great strategist.
Yeah, on top of everything else.
And, it's hard to be really good at any one of those things, let alone all of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I bring this back to modern days, you know, all the time. When I talk about trying to take over something that's really dysfunctional and try and make it work, I mean, you're doing many of the same things, only half the time you don't have time for a strategy. You don't have time for a long term because you're just trying to, plug the hole in the dam right now.
We
are kind of in that mode.
Not just
from a government standpoint, but from a societal standpoint too.
The lawyers would say you're going to fight the alligator closest to the boat.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah, and the more I see these protests, and believe me, everybody knows there is no softer touch in the world. Kevin's known me forever. I couldn't, if I had to, I would rather usher the fly out the front door than smack it. Now, mosquitoes, that's different. I'll get those guys because they're after me. But anybody who thinks that all what's happening, all the depth of these protests and the looting and everything, is all because of Minnesota and has nothing to do with the 40% unemployment rate of people under a certain stuff and the people sitting at home and been barricaded in their places and blah, blah, blah. I don't even think it has nothing to do with any of that other stuff, the intensity and everything. I think there's very few things, Kevin, that just have one spark to them. There's a lot of sparks, I think, that are going on right now.
Yeah, I think you're right.
How do you figure out which is which?
It's just all kind of, hitting us at the same time, and chaos is the result.
Yeah, and I was talking yesterday about the politics of the thing, and you've got on one hand, I actually had about a 10-second nightmare last night before I woke up. What if during the Civil War, instead of Lincoln, Trump would have been president? I just was like, God, don't do that to us, please. I mean,
it's interesting because this is something Lou has said for a long time. He's said this since the 2016 campaign. Character matters. Character matters when you get into these kinds of situations. It will drive decision making, and that's important. But it's just as important that there's confidence in the character of the leadership.
Well, somebody right now,
and we're way past that, and it's honestly, I wouldn't even say it's strictly a Trump issue. I would say, it's an issue with leadership in general, with leadership in so many institutions. We trust media anymore either. Well, that's a problem.
Well, somebody has to be a leader in extent that. I was not a massive fan of his policies, but Ronald Reagan, who cut to the core and said, tear down his wall. And Kennedy, when he went to Berlin and said, what did he say? I'm a Berliner. I mean, people said, those people, I don't really compare the intellect of Kennedy to Reagan, but Reagan had a lot of good things about him, too. But somebody needs to show up somehow mentally or either physically or whatever. You need to show up at one of these things and you need to deal with the protesters and say, this group that actually cares about what they're doing, come on, we're all taking a knee together. This other group, you guys that are out here to steal other people's stuff, by the way, get in a paddy wagon yourself or we're putting you in there. I mean, there needs to be some kind of leadership here. And on the one hand, we've got a guy trying to throw the army at people, which is not the solution. On the other hand, you got Jay and Lori pretending they got it all under control, and they don't. I mean, the answer is obviously in the middle, right?
And it's it's your pillars of it. I'll get theoretical for a minute, but these are your basic pillars. There has to be a vision. What are we trying to become here? And if you answer that question alone. You know, what are we trying in the United States to become? I don't know if you could give an answer. Once you have that answer, then you know everything that you do, every decision you make, has to be in the context of that vision, and you have to explain that to people so it doesn't look like a random sequence of decisions. But then the most important part of it is trust. Is if you don't have trust as a leader, you can't lead. Nothing else matters at that point, because if you're not trustworthy, nobody's going to follow you.
Well, and,
this is where we are right now.
And people have this.
I'm not sure we have a decent vision of America. You know, I mean, that was something. You know, like you said, like him or hate him, Ronald Reagan always had a very kind of descriptive vision of what America could be and should be.
Right.
And everybody knew it. And everybody knew that, you know, that the decisions he made were to move towards that. And, you know, then it becomes a matter of, you know, then a lot of other things come into play, competence and the ability to make good decisions and all of those kinds of things. But it starts with those pillars, and if you don't have those pillars, you're kind of screwed.
Well, he had people competent around him, you know, was not afraid of that. But, you know, it's interesting, as Manny and I were kind of talking about it in a way, and this, the entire, and I am not, quote, an expert. I don't know if there is one someplace. But I've been more in touch, I'm going to say, with the African-American community on the South Side than most. Certainly than 99% of the demonstrators. Not the black people, obviously. And, you know, because my grandparents didn't move when the neighborhood, quote, changed. So they didn't move. I was probably 9 years old, still going there and friends in the neighborhood and all those kinds of things. And my mom grew up where Englewood, she was valedictorian of Englewood High School, for God's sake. So half the place was black, half was white. And she would say that when she was growing up, she goes, it was horrible because at the end of the day, the white people walked one way, or the white kids and the black kids walked the other way. She goes, it never should have been like that. She said, but by and large, the black kids had mothers and fathers, they studied. We had mothers and fathers, we studied. Everybody was pretty much in the same economic boat. You know, this is after the black people came up from the South and were in the factories. She goes, their fathers made as much as certainly grandpa. He made a little more because he made himself a master boilermaker on a radio, but radio on the railroad. But she goes, there was really not much different. And somewhere in the 50s, a lot of this started to degrade. And I honestly don't know. My cousin told me there was a book on the subject, which I, of course, didn't read like an idiot. But a lot of it had to do with how we, you know, I don't know how, but somehow or another, the welfare system managed to tear some families apart. Somehow or another, this is not worked out properly. But anybody who thinks that the stealing in these neighborhoods is all white people, you're out of your mind. I mean, the money that's thrown there is siphoned off by everybody. I mean, I remember when I was in I think we might have just been going to Notre Dame, Kevin, but Jim Verbeck and I remember, my buddy Snake, they were doing one of the Dan Ryan reconversion deals, you know, and where it was going to work. Back in those days, they worked 24/7, so they went out looking for laborers. And I'm thinking back in like 1971 or 70, it was the unheard of, you know, $9 an hour or something like that. So it was real dough.
Yep.
For a college kid, for sure. And we probably went in the hood maybe 5 days in a row where there's all these people waiting to get hired. And all of a sudden there's this big black guy and he's mouthing off about why should he have to wait? He's a member of the coalition. And I'm thinking, what the hell's a coalition? So finally I got to be buddies with this other black dude and he was going to Illinois, I think, and he was trying to get the job and I was going to go to Notre Dame. And anyway, we became pretty good buddies after 3 days. Like, all right, by the way, what the hell's a coalition? He says, well, I'm not in it. He goes, I'm like you. There's this black guy told me, I'm like you, we're probably not going to get anything. He goes, these other guys are signed up with one of these aldermen or one of these preacher guys or something. And it's not just that they want to do some minority hiring. He goes, this is the first guy he's lecturing me there. And he goes, it's not minority hiring. They don't care about if you're black. He goes, I'm black. I'm not going to get the job just like you aren't. He's, but I'm here just in case. He says, it's about the guys that are willing to pay and it was $1.50 an hour to whoever the preacher or whoever the coalition head was. And sure enough, on a Sunday night when without any fanfare, all those people met in some place and they all got hired. And we went there the next morning, Monday morning, and they said, hiring took place last night. Well, there was no notification on that. You're right, there wasn't. Okay. I mean, so it's not like...
Good call.
I mean, it's not like the money that goes into the black area. I mean, I could probably name you, and I would never would on the air. I'm going to say that out of all the dough that the minority people get in Chicago for a lot of these big projects, I could probably name you four names where the money goes through those four people. It's not just some random black dude walking down the block that you're going to slap a contract on. I mean, it's not happening. And I'm going to say two of the four, I don't even think are certainly not 100% black. I'm not even sure one of them is half black. But I mean, once you get your tooth in there, once you get your feet in there, these projects cannot go without getting your piece. Now you get your piece, then you parcel it out. But it's not like when you got rid of the white alderman stealing the dough and put a black guy in there, that the stealing stopped. It just went to a different guy. I mean, so it's not like, I know what I'm saying now. I mean, Maddie, what can I say? It's the absolute truth. The stealing is up and down the line. The corruption is up and down the line. And it's exceptionally unfortunate. So what are we asking for here? Are we asking for no white policemen in African-American neighborhoods? I don't think that's what we're asking, are we?
I mean, well, I don't know what we're asking because we keep saying we need to change. And it's not just saying this week that we need change. We've been saying this every time there is a police incident like this. We got to have change. Things have to change. Well, you know what? Keep voting for the same people who have been running your cities for the last, I don't know how many decades.
Same alderman.
Expect change.
Yeah, same alderman.
What is it? Same alderman, same mayor, same political party. All of that, keep voting for the same people who hires police chiefs, who sets policy for the police department, hires the police chiefs to implement the policy, and to make it good. Who's doing that? Because we keep voting them back in.
Right. I'm looking for a goofy quote here from, I'll find it. Keep talking, Kevin. Yeah, I mean, where are we, where am I at here? I'll find it at some point here. What is the action? I can't imagine, does anybody think that even if a guy is tearing up somebody's car or doing something, a legitimate crime, do you think any arrest is without incident? Did anybody say, "Hey, Joe, here, please put the cuffs on"? Do you think every single one there isn't some kind of a struggle or something?
Well, there may be, but you saw the video.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is, I don't know what we're asking for. I was talking to one of Audrey's friends, and her dad was a policeman for like a longer time than mine. Well, she knew him a longer time than I knew mine. And she said he was one of the most, like, liberal-minded guys when he joined the force. And because he had that point of view, he never got out of, like, a real bad neighborhood. I mean, that's where he was. That's his entire community, because he was very good at it. She goes, I don't know how he was on the job, but I could just see him every single year he got more and more, whatever the word would be. Just, it just bothered him more. Yeah, he just got more disillusioned. I mean, every arrest, there's a struggle. Every arrest, the same people you're arresting over and over again. Whether they came back out of the prison system without, even worse than when they went in. I mean, I don't know. He just said at one point he couldn't wait to get out of there and couldn't wait to quit. You know, this is, and I'm none of this is doing anything. I think the guy in Minnesota was an idiot. He loved doing stuff, bringing people to the edge, and he screwed up and he went a little too far. I mean, I would doubt very seriously when he did that, his intention was to kill the guy. But he wanted to get so close to prove a point that somehow he screwed up, which is pretty horrible. Matter of fact, it's real horrible, right?
Well, I look at it like this, Tom. Let's take this instance, but you know, I have no other conclusion to draw than the guy's probably been doing this all along. So, what I would say is, this is, you know, putting your knee on that guy. First of all, if there's a struggle, if he resists arrest, let's say all of that is true.
But I don't think he did.
True,
yeah,
as
did.
Soon as you have him cuffed and down on the ground and under control, that struggle's over.
I'm with you. You're not going to
debate it. As a professional police officer, hey, maybe you deal with this every day. Maybe you snap. Maybe you go over the edge. But as a professional, your job at that point is to say, this is over, I'm done. And that's not what this guy did. What he did was sadistic.
I'm with you.
And if it wasn't intended to kill him, it was just intended to, you know, to basically to he was mistreating the guy. I don't know
it was intended
another way to say it.
He was intended to get very close, very close.
Point he was trying to make by doing it, it was a sadistic, I can't even say the word,
yeah.
Sadistic, mean-spirited thing that he had to be doing all along.
Oh, yeah.
And this is just the one that blew up.
It's the one that he went a little too far.
Well, or
a little
no,
too
he
far?
Always
well, I mean, a little,
Jesus Christ.
When
I
he
say
always
it,
went too far. This is the
yeah,
one
what
that
I
came
mean,
back and got
I'll
him.
I'll back that up. He went too far where there was no coming back.
Okay. Yeah, however you want to word
yeah.
it.
There's no coming back for the guy that's dead.
That's what I'm saying. It's
saying
a little,
though,
that's like a lot too far.
And so this is where the problem lies in policing. And it isn't every cop. It isn't most cops, but it's enough. And unfortunately, there's a code that says we don't rat out the other cops. There were people who stood by watching it, so they obviously weren't thoroughly appalled.
Yeah.
So it's nothing they hadn't seen before, and there's enough complaints. Like this, you know, this particular cop had 15 complaints against him.
Thought it was 19, but it's up there.
And,
yeah.
And so here's where it gets bad, is nothing happened on any of those complaints. The prosecutor, Amy Klobuchar at the time, you know, did not pursue this stuff. And in choosing to ignore it at the prosecutor level, which is an elected political position, that means you're talking political leadership, tacitly condoning it by their actions. And, you know, why would they do that? Oh, I don't know. Could it be because there is so much public service union, including police union, money that comes into their campaign coffers? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know that to be true, but
it's
that
messed
would
up.
Sure be my first suspicion.
We got a break, but SP Futures up.
Political support for turning their heads.
SP Futures up 11.15. As if Futures up 25 is the Fed keeps sprinkling the infield. Here's a quote from Maddie's favorite guy, John Wayne. As we live in an insane world, Major, maybe it's time we give insane solutions a chance. What do you think? We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Now, Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kevin Neal with us as well. S&P futures up 11. NASDAQ futures up 19. The market just keeps right on ripping up, and I'll give a couple of money supply numbers. I'll just be brief today with that, but they're high. Dow futures up 159 over in Europe. Remember, these guys got $1 trillion 10 days ago, so they're still celebrating that. DAX up 272, 2.2%. They've decided to go out with, oh, by the way, we didn't really cover this yesterday. They decided to go out with bonds now that are Euro bonds, more so than just where Germany's going to be part of this bonds that they're all buying, they're going out with. And it's scary. They're just opening up the trough, too. FTSE up 70, 1.1%. CAC round up 92, 1.9%. I just don't even want to think about the cliff when this ends. Nikkei up 288, 1.3%. Shanghai up 1, call that flat. Hang Seng up 329, 1.4%. They're doing nothing but riding over there. The stock market goes up every day. It's pretty unbelievable. 10-year, 0.68, right where it's been. The bonds refuse to move up this yield. How can they with the money pouring in? 1 minus 0.40. Japan, positive 0.009. Oil down 80 cents, 36.01, but still up there. It's as high as it's been for a while, over 35. Brent down 71, 38.86. Natural gas, 180. That's creeping up a little bit. RBOB, 109. And we've got gold. It's heading south a little bit again today, but still 17 and a quarter, minus $8. Silver down 4 cents, but still 18.22. Many we have for us, Trevi Weathersports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Looks like we have one issue right now. That's on I-355, the Veterans Memorial, on the southbound side between Roosevelt Road and Butterfield Road out in the western suburbs. Apparently a northbound tanker truck fire has the northbound side closed, and then there's gapers on the southbound side. So it was an overturned tanker truck between Butterfield and Roosevelt on the northbound side of the I-355 that has it completely closed. The truck is on its side on fire. The tank is carrying a full load of propane. So a pretty serious issue out in the western suburbs affecting the I-355 tollway. Not good. Everything else looking okay, though. If you're coming in on the Ryan, I-57 or the Bishop Ford, it's all quiet. Same for the Eisenhower. Kennedy and Eden's looking good, too. Lakeshore Drive is moving smoothly. No report of closed downtown exits at this hour at all. So apparently all exits are open right now. So if you're trying to get into downtown, of course, Illinois reopens today, the Phase 3 reopening. All of the, I should say Chicago. Illinois opened last week, but Chicago opens today for outdoor seating at bars and restaurants. We'll see how many actually open, as a lot of them are boarded up.
Yep.
But that's a factor, and I think that's part of the reason why the downtown exits are open. One other issue in the area, way southwest, I-80 westbound, near I-55, there is an accident that has 80 partially blocked off with crews on the scene. But that's way west, even west of Joliet on the map. Weather today, much cooler than yesterday. So that's good news if you were hot yesterday, as we reached the low 90s yesterday. Today we'll have some rain in the forecast and a high of just 75. Right now it's overcast and 71 degrees downtown. Still dry though. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and hot with a high of 110. Right now it's clear and 87. Obviously not much going on in sports, so on this day in sports history, Chief, June 3rd, 1987, you might remember this. It was a Cubs versus Astros game back when the Astros were in the National League and before they were filming pitchers. At Wrigley Field, in front of 19,725 fans, it became the second game ever to have three grand slams in one game.
Really?
The Cubs blew out the Astros that day 22-7. The Cubs had a 9-run first inning and then kept attacking on throughout the game. But three grand slams were hit in this one. The Astros hit one. Billy Hatcher hit one off Rick Sutcliffe, actually, in the looks like the fourth inning of that game. But the Cubs hit two grand slams in that game. Brian Dayett, who I don't actually even remember.
Catcher, I think.
He hit one in the first inning. And then Keith Moreland hit one later on in the ball game off of Julio Solano. So Cubs with a big day that day. Three grand slams in one game on this date in 1987. Chief.
You know who else? Basketball note, a sad one. Wes Unseld died yesterday.
Yeah, Hall of Famer. Or MVP and Hall of Famer.
I'm going to say that, Kevin, would you say that he had to be one of the strongest men to ever play basketball?
Yeah, strongest, toughest. He won the MVP as a rookie.
Was he 6'7", center?
I don't think he ever averaged more than 14, 15 points a game. And, yes, he was a 6'7", to 6'8", type of center. And he was just a badass.
But he was 18 rebounds.
And not in any kind of a cheap way. He was just a really, really tough man. Arguably the best basketball player ever to come out of the University of Louisville.
Listed at 6'7". Yeah. So if you're listed at 6'7", I mean, he could have been 6'5", for all we know.
But he was, he was 18 rebounds a game, 19 or something?
Some years, yeah. He was up in the 18 rebounds a game, and I think for his career, when I looked, he averaged like 14 for his career. Obviously the numbers were much lower late in the career.
I was watching one of the old Cub games last night because I'm trying to figure out why the games were so much faster. Greg Maddux was, you know, it was a 1989 game. Greg Maddux, he was like 13 seconds at a plate, Matty, between pitches. I mean, it's half as long as they are now, maybe even more so. But I didn't realize, but Harry Carey was rattling off, you barely understand the guy, but that Don Zimmer, I mean, everybody knows him as like old plate head because he got hit in the head with the ball and he was in a coma for 2 weeks and then they put a plate in his head or something. But everybody looked at him, he looked like Popeye. Well, there was a guy that wrote in something to Harry Carey while we were in Cincinnati because Zimmer had gone back there as the manager of the Cubs. So it was like a triumphant return. And the guy gave Harry his life story. Evidently, his dad owned a wholesale food place. And he would get up at 2:30 in the morning before high school, and he would load all the potatoes and all the sacks of stuff. And evidently, the dude was strong as an ox. I mean, he was a small man. But and the guy says, well, now he looks like a sack of potatoes, which wasn't all that complimentary. But I didn't realize that he was a hell of a basketball player, and that he was voted, according to this letter, of course, I couldn't find it on the Internet, the single best prep football star in Cincinnati for the first 50 years of their high schools having football teams. So obviously there's guys now that are way better, but I had no idea the guy was that well-rounded of an athlete. He was like a Lou Boudreau. Well, maybe even better. You look at these guys and you think they just look like a couple of schlumps, but they aren't. When you reach, and he, in Major League Baseball, had a very mediocre career. I mean, he was on a bunch of different teams. He was on the 62 Mets of all teams, and that was not exactly a high point in anybody's career, right? But I had no idea all that stuff was happening. But Kevin, I always get this feeling. I mean, it's a theme to the show for me, is that whenever people push one way, somebody gets pushed. I mean, one thing I I remember about physics is what the angle of inflection equals the angle of reflection, right? Always good to think of when you're shooting pool, by the way. But what are people asking for here? I mean, what do people think police work is? It's not kneeling on somebody's neck. I get that. But every single event is somewhat of a challenge on somebody who doesn't want to be there with you. Every traffic stop. Guy doesn't want to be stopped. Some people are gentlemanly, some people aren't. Some people, it's your fault, not their fault. And everybody's got their phone out now. What I see in Chicago, there are no traffic stops. There's none. And now we have people shooting at people in the expressway. I don't think there's any, there's nothing you could do leaving downtown. And I don't care if you're a white yup, if you're this, if you're that, if you're blue and green, but if you're three black guys in a car racing down Orion at 100 miles an hour on a Saturday night, there is no chance anybody's pulling you over. Not a chance on hell that anybody's going to take the chance of whatever happens at that stop. And what do people think any regular arrest is like? This is not a first date off the internet where you're going and kissing somebody in a bar. This is something different. It's like football. It's not a contact sport. It's a collision sport. You're talking about somebody doing something probably wrong. You essentially confronting them. And instead of taking them home, cuffing them and putting them in a squad car and taking them to jail. This is not an easy thing. What do people think this is, Kevin? I mean, I understand how you have to do it properly. I get that. But what do they think? This is not something that's in anybody else's regular day, right?
Yeah, I get you on that, Tom. The catch is it doesn't matter who you are. If you're three black guys driving down the street at 30 miles an hour off of the highway, and you get stopped for no good reason, and then you get put up against the car and frisked and all that.
Never said I approved of that. Never.
I know that's a different indignity, and that's yes. Part. You know, that's part of the problem. That's part of the big policing problem that we have. There's a really good, I'd have to fish it out and I can tweet it out for the listeners, but because it's several years old. But there was a really good article a young man wrote about, you know, growing up black in Naperville and how many times he used to get stopped just for being in his own neighborhood.
Oh,
because
yeah, yeah.
He didn't quote belong. I think there are a number of, you know, those are the somewhat slight policing issues, but then it gets worse, and then you know you start getting into the abuse of officer or you know those kinds of things, and you know it has to be a policy change from the top.
Well, it also.
You know, there's really not another way to say it.
I would agree.
But you know, we have to. You know, how do we want the relationship for the police to be? You know, look on a stupid stupid much less serious level. I'm against speed traps because I don't think that's the relationship we want the police to have. I want the police to be visible. I want them to be visible on the highways, and I want people to, and I want them to stop reckless drivers and everything. But I don't want them trying to play gotcha with
Kevin,
who's gotten to 11 miles over the speed limit, and I'm hiding out looking to catch you. That's just a tax.
I'm going to say that I've
100% agree.
So, you would, and so does my girlfriend, and I think you're all wrong. I mean, right now the entire I agree with the part that. The small, dirty 25-mile-an-hour speed limit in a small town, I get it, okay? But we're talking about, and I'll say this about my significant other, anything under 90 is an affront to her dignity. no matter what she's doing, it's a speed trap. Well, you know, come on.
But I'm saying that's reckless driving. Get out and be visible, and people, first of all, you want people, if you're visible enough, you'll have a deterrent factor.
But I mean, we had a guy on the show,
and that's good. And I don't mind setting up out on the street. It's hiding behind the bushes that bugs me.
I don't disagree. But my point, Kevin, is what are we looking for? I mean, and I think a lot of it has to do with community policing. Okay, and one of the things you're supposed to do as a policeman is you're supposed to notify, you're supposed to notice anything out of the ordinary. Okay, you're supposed to anticipate crime before it happens. Now, my concern with the black kid in Naperville is just like if I'm walking down the street in Inglewood, the cop pulls up, what are you doing here? Well, I live here. Okay. Well, if the same cop is in that area, you would hope after 2 or 3 days, hey, that guy lives there. You would hope, I mean, I can understand the question the first time because I didn't think any black people lived here. I didn't think any white people. In other words, you're supposed to notice things. You're not supposed to be abrasive about it. You're not supposed to be abusive about it. You're supposed to learn. Okay, you live there? Fine. I'll make sure that when I come by, I'll make sure nobody's hassling you. I mean, right? I mean, there's a way to go about this. You can tell it's sort of in the blood with me. But I mean, if you ever watched NYPD Blue when Sipowicz was talking about how he almost shot some guy because he was in some neighborhood and some black guy walks out the back door of this toy store with all these toys. He pulls out his gun and he wants to arrest him. And he goes, it turns out the guy owned the place. And he said, that's my fault. That's my neighborhood. I should have known he owned that place. We don't have anything like that now. Yes, there are amazing improvements that we should make. People should know their neighborhood, both to protect it when people come in that don't belong there, you know, because they're coming in to loot or something, and just to know your people. I mean, we go from a guy who wants to be community policing in Chicago, we fire that guy and the other guy doesn't. He wants this, we only answer call stuff. Then we fire him and the next guy wants to be community policing again. I mean, what are we doing here, Kevin? But I'd like to see
and
a change
so
like
this,
you.
This goes back to who's running the city and what's the vision for how policing in the city will work. And because because almost every city is a one-party city, it should be easy to have a portable vision of that outlasts individual mayors. It's just something that we don't have. We're always winging it.
Well, as a citizen,
crappy leadership, Tom.
As an older citizen that's getting, a little slower, not be able to dodge out of the way of cars anymore, I'm going to say that the police department we have now, where you can see two squad cars and a guy blow through a stoplight right in front of him, and the chances of them going after him are zero. And we see many reports 3 times, 10 times a month of people shooting each other on the expressways. They never get arrested. We're talking about, Kevin, the murders in the black community. 75% of the murders in Chicago are black on black. And the rate of even arrest, not a conviction, is 14%. Kevin, something's wrong. I mean,
there's a whole pathology there, and that's a different subject. It's related, but it's a different subject. And that's, I'm not discussing that today because we need about 6 shows to really get into it. But it's a piece of the puzzle. But right now, when we talk about policing, look, there's a whole lot that we can complain about, we can argue about what's right, what's wrong, but let's just start with the easy stuff.
Well,
let's
absolutely
start with, you know, the complaints lodged against officers and vigorously look into them, take them seriously, look into them, and where it's warranted, go after them and get them out of there.
I would say, Kevin, that's
a really basic thing that ain't happening.
I would say, Kevin, that shows from my experience with a guy training for, I knew his brother was a real mean guy. He got a police force. When his first 2 years, the dude had already been relegated to desk duty a couple times because he was too enthusiastic during arrests. At some point, after 2 years, why don't you sit the guy down and say, this job's not for you? I mean, I'm not saying, you know, it just isn't. I mean, you've got 5 complaints. Now, you know, he's going to have he's going to have his lawyer with him and everything. But, most people, maybe there's 1 or 2 or something, just because people like to make complaints these days. You've got 10. Like this guy in Minnesota, you said 15, I thought he had 19. What's the, quote, normal number? Does everybody else have 3 or 4 just because people like making complaints? Well, is 19 stand out? I would guess it would. I mean, are you going to have a discussion with the guy? What are you doing? What's going on? Or talk to a couple of people around him. What's with this guy? Why is he getting all these complaints? Well, maybe they'll shut up. I don't know. But I mean, what is the process for weeding out the few bad apples? Black and white. I mean, it's not just some white guys like to beat up on people. A lot of black guys do too. I think people are the same, black and white. I'm colorblind, so I have a different view of this. I mean, for every bad person of one color, there's a bad person of another color. For every good person, there's probably, you know, whatever. So this is not like there's. But what is the solution? We don't pull anybody over because we're afraid it'll go bad and somebody's going to be watching it with 15 people going to stop with a cell phone. Do we not want white cops in black neighborhoods? Do we not want black cops in white neighborhoods? I wouldn't want that. I have no problem. The guys protecting my area, I don't care what color they are, as long as they do a good job. So, what is the solution that people are paying the table for here for? But I tell you what, Kevin, I know that every life, and I saw that and I'm as horrified as anybody else, then I go to Hey Jackass and I realize there's been 1,131 shootings in this city, and five of them were policemen. Maybe out of the five, two of them were bad shoots, three of them weren't, I don't know. But maybe one was a bad shoot. If there's only one, it's not a good thing. My first thought is, what about the other 1,131? What about those people? They're just as dead or shot. I care about them too. And if we get the policemen the hell out of there, that can't be going to get better, is it?
It's not going to get better. And so, like I said, there's a whole. Pathology and who's to blame is a big part of it. I remember living that when I lived in St. Joseph, Michigan, in this crazy pathology between Benton Harbor and St. Joe, and it's the same thing. You know, the whole, you know, where blame rests and how blame rests is everybody is pointing the finger the other way.
Well, Kevin, why can't
matter of which finger?
Why can't we stop these gangs? Is it because some policemen and some people in politics are on the take?
Could be.
Well, man, why don't we have a protest of 10,000 people getting three addresses of gangbangers' houses and walking down the street there and saying, "Why'd you shoot this little girl?" I mean, policemen aren't doing anything about it. I value everybody's life the same. The fact that those people, the kids that are being killed in these neighborhoods, don't have a chance to have a life, that's horrible to me, Kevin. It's worse than anything. Nobody cares.
Well, it is, and again, that's you know, there's a larger issue. There's you know, overarching issues. There's you know, issues in between. Right now, we're talking about policing. And, you know, again, I'll go back to saying, you know, when we look at the demonstrations, my first reaction was that by turning them into riots, that people are stepping all over their own message. And my subsequent reaction, as we've learned more, is, no, they're separate people. You have the people that want to demonstrate, that want to have their protests and deal with issues. And then you have this second layer of people who are just there to cause trouble. And
well, I think
that ain't helping us either.
I think we need to get away from this idea that it's somewhat, it's color. Well, I mean, obviously this guy's white and the guy who's dead is black, so you can't get away from it there. But the idea that if we only could get, I mean, when I grew up, when I was young, if we could just get the white aldermen out of the black areas where they're stealing the money, that's the solution. Okay, now we got black aldermen are stealing just as much. That wasn't a solution to squat, Kevin. One person stealing the same as another person stealing, I don't care what color you are. So obviously that's not the solution. It's the stealing that's the solution. I mean, what are we doing? Does it really matter if it's a Mexican gang or a black gang or a white gang somewhere like they used to be when the Irish had gangs in New York? They're still a gang. It's anarchy and they fill in where the police. I mean, with some of the gangs over on Pulaski, I have my sources, they were on the roof with guns protecting buildings from people. Now, whether they're getting paid, because the police wouldn't do it. There's such an amazing difference of point of view here I mean, I listened to somebody on the TV saying, well, a few broken windows is a price to pay, you know, for getting our message out. Now, that guy was, I'm sure he's an outlier, so it's not like everybody thinks that. Yet I talked to other people that are in the, I'll say, the lower class, and the thing they've always wanted their whole life is their own store. The thought of somebody breaking into your store and a guy not getting shot, well, how's that? Why, how's that any kind of society? I worked my whole life for a place and people can just ruin it and nobody cares? I mean, there's a million points of view on this, and you have to listen to all of them, I think. Just saying.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's a legit comment, and yes, we do have to listen to all of them. Actually, I don't, because I don't have to listen to the Antifa people.
Well, right. Who are those people? I don't even know who that is. Like, I'm getting emails about that.
They've been around. They've been causing a lot of trouble for a long time.
What would you equate them to?
You haven't been aware of them?
Well, I mean, I've heard the name, but who would you equate them to?
Weather Underground.
Okay. So just whatever something is, they stoke the fires and make it worse.
Yeah, and they're kind of the communist or socialist radicals.
I think people are radicals just like doing bad stuff. Anyway, we'll talk about it more on Friday, but SP Futures up 14.50, NASDAQ Futures up 33. We're back with Mr. Russell Rhodes, talk about the market, talk about why we keep going up every day. The worse things get, the more we go up. I think I know what it is. We'll see if Russell agrees with me. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear
ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. It's from Matt Weber. He's Professor Russell Rhodes. S&P futures up 1475. NASDAQ futures up 33. Russell has been triple long the market now for 4 weeks, and he's going to tell us exactly when we should flatten out and get out.
I wish. I'm in the triple leveraged cash fund.
Yeah, triple. There you go. Making a lot of interest, I assume.
I stole that from somebody who used that line all the time on Bloomberg. So,
God.
There are probably a couple people that roll their eyes and going, I've heard that 1,000 times.
Our buddy Dennis Dick, who's been on the show, he says, the market is done with. Buy the dip and sell the rip. It's now buy the dip and buy the rip.
Yep.
Just buy. The FOMO guy, what is it? The FOMO guys are beating out the double dippers.
Well,
double dippers were waiting for the next dip to buy, and the FOMO guy, people keep moving over to the FOMO side. Because all the pretty girls are there.
That's right.
Well, so Russell, I'll ask you the same question I ask everybody, which I shouldn't, mm-hmm. but if I were to say to you, we're going to double, you got $100 in your pocket, I'm going to say you now have $200 with everybody in the country. Everybody would say you would just adjust. The market would double. If we owed you somebody $50, it's now $100. Why is it that we have people all day long that are educated, peaceful? Some are even professors. They actually know professors. You're higher than these guys, CNBC mm-hmm. guys. Why is it they spend 8 hours, 12 hours a day trying to figure out everybody's glee in the market? When I got the money supply going to be up essentially 25 to 30% this year. So instead of doubling, it's up 30%. So why wouldn't the market be up 30% without any increase in value whatsoever?
Well, it should be up 30% without any increase in value. But I mean, that's how it should work.
Okay, so now there's.
I thought you were going on the path of why are they continuously so positive on the business networks?
Yeah, well, I mean, what is it? I guess I'll put it a simpler way. Why are you and I the only two that say that?
Why are we the only two?
Well, Jim Grant
because
does.
We're not as hung up on ratings as other people that get in front of people. And this actually, I'm glad you went in this direction because it kind of comes from part of what I'm working on in my dissertation.
Really?
Which is the amount of time people spend watching the business networks is exponentially higher when we're in a bull market than a bear market. It's an unbelievable difference how much people tune in to what's going on in those markets.
Are you sure about that?
Huh?
Are you sure about that?
I am positive about that.
And
it goes beyond just the business networks. It goes on. It's beyond just that one.
The reason why I ask you.
Mm-hmm. But the extreme sell-offs are great for them.
That's what I was going to go with. Dr. J tells me that their highest ratings days for sure are when the market's flying down.
Oh yeah, no, everybody's that's like a one day anomaly.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Over the long term, and it goes beyond that. It's like Investor's Business Daily, Wall Street Journal, subscriptions to all those type things. When the stock market's doing well, when we have an up 25-30% year for the S&P 500, it is very good for people that are in the business of talking about business.
Okay, but
I don't know if it. I don't know if it is a conscious decision on their part to always be bullish and never bring up the things that you should really be concerned about, or if they've. I don't know. I don't know if it's a conscious or unconscious decision.
I'm going to say it's very conscious. Because 99% of the money managers they have on there are long-only people. They'll get a few.
Oh, yeah. I worked at one of the few mutual funds that could go both long and short back in the 90s. And they had us on one. And we talked about a couple of our shorts, and they got negative. They got a pretty negative reaction from the company we talked about being short. And we didn't trash them. We just said we think the fundamentals are not in favor of, it was actually the oil drilling industry before the oil price cracked. And the drilling guys went, they contacted us, they contacted CNBC. It was, you know, just for mentioning in passing that we were short, which anybody could have found out.
Well, so if I had,
I don't know if it's that, if it's, they don't want the hassle of talking about, you know, negative stuff. I don't know.
Well, so if I had a fund that only did long stuff, which most of them do, by the way, and,
yeah,
and I charged, you know, percent and a half, which is pretty egregious for just throwing some people in stocks on January 2nd and leaving them there all year. You know, we don't charge anywhere near that much, and we do a lot more work. But anyway, but if that's what I did, I'm going to say that if I sent you as our marketing guy or PR guy on national TV, and you were to say, our Matty Weber, our astronomist, just said there's an asteroid heading for New York, so what you should really do is call us up and tell them to send you a check home. I think that would be your investment advice. I don't think you last too long on that job, Russell. They don't care what it is. The solution is never to get out of the market, because it means you're withdrawing money from them that they're charging you to manage.
No.
That will never be the solution.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a preaching of the choir thing with me. You know, like you said, the majority of them are bullish. The majority of them are, you know, for lots of conscious and subconscious reasons, want the stock market to continuously go up and don't want to hear any bad stuff. It's one of the reasons we overshoot so much to the downside when things turn quickly.
Well,
because people are digesting a lot of bad information that they should have been digesting for months.
Why do you say? Why do you say
until the price happens?
I love jousting with you. Why do you say we overshoot to the downside?
We do. We overshot because we generally come back fairly quickly and recover the big dips. And again, I'm talking about things. Well, what just happened? You know, we've got sectors that have fully recovered from, we've got the NASDAQ. I don't know if it made its all-time high yesterday or not, but it's really close. There's an absolute panic out during periods of higher volatility, and because people are having to raise cash. And the reason that I say that we overshoot to the downside is because we always work our way back up within, you know, usually about 6 months. If the market's adjusting for, you know, a completely new paradigm, why does it, you know, adjust back so quickly?
Manny, mark this. Do you have a way where you can mark the tape for saving for future use?
I can certainly note it, yeah.
Please do that. Because I want that comment from our professor, because I'm going to say if I had the intelligence or had done the work for the last clearly 8 or 9 years, Russell, mm-hmm. every single time we have, quote, overshot to the downside, the catalyst to come back to the upside has been a Fed move. ECB move.
They push us back.
So
off.
I'm going to say we have never had a fair pricing mechanism. Not that it should be 40% lower or anything like that. We've never once had a fair pricing mechanism in the last 8 or 9 years.
The two times that I've talked, when I say overshoot to the downside, I mean what we just went through in 2008. And what we just went through, if you treat the S&P 500 as a single company, and you assume, and you value it on a cash flow basis, if you assume that cash flows are going to be net negative, net zero for 2020 and 2021, that should have taken about 11 or 12% out of the S&P 500, which is about where we are now.
But it took
a lot more out of the S&P 500.
Well, we just put
And well, I know, and I know how it got back to where.
Right, how can I say this? How can I say this? How can I say this somewhat mathematically?
Mm-hmm.
If what just happened, okay,
mm-hmm.
if okay, the S&P 500 was unencumbered, bouncing along with the pricing mechanism that we all grew up with or thought we knew. Okay, what mm-hmm. just happened? I'm 100% in agreement with you. But right now, I don't know what is the price of the market. I mean, when you start taking the COVID thing and 40% of the people out of work at some levels, and all the other stuff you're laying on top of it, the amount of companies that are going to go under, the idea that there is no correction whatsoever, that, I mean, how do we know from what number we're starting from, I guess is my question.
If that's been inflated or not, that one I can't, the number before, I'm sure that there's a little bit of padding in it because there was nowhere else for money to go, but, you know, just back to, if you assume that the market was correct in January, February, before things started to fall apart, you know, we're really mathematically where we should be compared to that level, based on the fundamentals.
So you sound like a professor to me. When I say that, by the way, I'm being a lover, not giving you crap.
Oh, I know.
But because whenever and I'll put you in the same category as Milton Friedman and the rest of them, they would always say, here's a problem, assume perfect competition, assume mm-hmm. a monopoly, assume a cartel, what's going to happen if this happens, and you run your way through it. Assume a market is properly priced, and over the next 4 months, you know, an asteroid hits Denver or something, we lose X number of people, life insurance companies are on the brink of collapse, and the Fed goes in and does this, and by the way, it knocks 3% off the growth of the country for a year, and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to say that the answer is 15% dip in the market, 12%, 20 maybe for a short period of time, and when it looks like Denver's going to live again, it comes back. But if I were to say, assume a market totally inflated where the Fed just put $4 trillion into it in the last 3 weeks, then what's the answer, Professor?
I think the answer is probably going to be a flat stock market for the next 2-3 years. Still a fundamental catch-up.
But it all depends on where you start, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And where do you think we are right now?
A lot of assumptions in there.
Well, I mean, my concern is what I was dying to have you on, but get to you this week, is it seems to me that the numbers that it takes to keep us in this position where I don't think we belong, meaning the market being totally different than what I consider the rest of the economy, we're not talking about hundreds of billions of dollars anymore. We're talking about, you know, we're talking about, for the European market to maintain their facade over there, we're talking about $1 trillion 2 weeks ago. We're talking about $3 trillion is here. We're not talking about Fed puts in $100 million and gooses the market on a Tuesday morning after it was down on Friday and Monday. We're way past that. It seems to me that it's taking more and more water to grow the same corn in the drought than it did a week ago. And am I wrong there or not? I mean, we're reaching a number now. What's the next one? Is it going to be $5 trillion or 10? I mean, where are we even at here?
We're at a point where hopefully the business activity starts to catch back up, and the Fed can allow, you know, market forces to take over for just a little while. And I think that's what they hope, is that they have actually put the fire out. Unfortunately, that might not be the case, just because of the lingering effect of the COVID has turned into folks basically tearing up a lot of retail establishments and whatnot.
Well,
which I'm amazed that has not caused at least a little bit of concern with respect to the financial market.
But
the financial markets are probably operating under the assumption that you're throwing that we all kind of know in the back of our minds, and that's that we're going to get bailed out.
Well, let's say, for instance, we're having a big cookout, and we got to cook up a lot of chow because we're inviting over Matty Weber and his brother and that gang, and those guys still playing basketball. They still eat a lot. And I say, geez, Russell's charcoal is a little bit wet, but I think it's still okay. Here's the charcoal lighter. Just prime it up a little bit. Well, four charcoal lighter cans later, we still can't get the stuff to light. Maybe we ought to try something else, like maybe some different charcoal.
Well, they've successfully stabilized the financial market.
Okay.
They have. I mean, they have achieved that, at least for the short term.
Well, they haven't achieved it for savers. And they certainly haven't achieved it.
Oh, I know. They've achieved it. They've achieved the surface number that we see from day to day.
Yes.
That most people pay attention to, and it's one fewer thing that the average Joe can point their finger at. You know, they can't say I've lost my job, inflation's around the corner, and the S&P 500 is down 40%. You know, at least they don't get to say the and right now.
Right.
And then for some reason, they don't, I don't think the inflation, the potential inflation part, I almost feel like this is a Chicken Little thing because it's something I've been worried about for 7 or 8 years.
Why do you think it hasn't happened?
Yeah. And it hadn't happened, really.
I mean, it has happened,
but it hasn't happened in a headline way that everybody's aware of.
Okay.
No, it hadn't. I mean, and the way that it's measured and whatnot. I mean, you and I both know, and a lot of people that pay a lot more attention to these things than the average person know that the cost of stuff continues to go through the roof.
We went to
whether it's how much I've been paying for my train ticket since I've been for the 15 years that I've been living in the burbs, it's almost doubled. You know, how much it costs on the tollway to go to and from downtown, how much parking has gone up, those sorts of things. How much rent in Chicago has gone up. A lot of people don't have to deal with that, but I was absolutely shocked when I found out what somebody was paying for a one-bedroom pretty close to Loyola's downtown campus.
How about tuition at Loyola?
Tuition at Loyola, I do not know what the year-over-year change has been for that.
You want me to find out?
Oh, I know. I know where it is right now. Or I know where it was last year. I don't know what the intent is.
I'm going to say that Saturday night, Audrey and I made it. I mean, she, of course, couldn't wait to go out to dinner. How about this is a great line? She goes, if you ever capture me in warfare, this is funny, man, but obviously very fond of what. she goes, if I'm in warfare, all you have to do is put me in a cell for 6 months. If I can't get a pedicure or can't go out to dinner, I'll tell you everything you want to know.
That's fantastic.
Anyway, we go to, Pepe's. Why these guys, it's a beautiful Pepe's, and it's, why they even have that brand? I don't know. If you think of Pepe's, you think of some old fast food place. It's this gorgeous Mexican place in Homer Glen. So we go in there and people love us. I'm going to say the average menu price, not of, what I have, but I mean, the combo platters, the highest one used to be 13 and now it's 20. This is in 5 weeks. Those are real numbers. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, so I think what we're seeing is, are we really, I mean, obviously I'd like to zero in on the healthcare and the tuition. I mean, the really big items. I mean, I really don't care about the Nehru sport coat, since nobody's wearing any sport coats because nobody's going to work. I don't care about that one. I don't even care about TVs because you buy a TV once a decade unless you're Jay Pritzker. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm talking
You only buy a TV once a decade?
I don't know. Mine has got to be 10 years old and it's fine to me. It's a smart TV. I still haven't hooked it up to anything smart. So it's still beyond me. So what's the point? Just saying.
If it works for you, it works for you.
Well, it got me the Cub game in black and white last night, or 2 nights ago in 1969.
Oh, that's all you need.
Yeah.
I remember when the world was black and white, and then it started to fade to color?
Yeah, I was surprised that the national TV game, first of all, I didn't remember that there were national TV. Every time I watch one of these things, these old games, I learn something, Russell, scary as it may seem.
There was Saturday afternoon national baseball. If you grew up in a city that did not have a major league team, you would be very aware of that because that's all we got. We got one game a week.
I don't ever remember watching an
NHL game. And we got the Cardinals game on KMOX, but you had to make sure that you hooked your radio up to an antenna.
Yeah, I didn't. I don't ever recall watching one of those. I was always Channel 9. The weird part is Channel 9 was color, I'm going to say, way before 69. Maybe they weren't. But I've forgotten all about is they started talking about the Cincinnati Reds only had 23 people in the bench, in the roster that night, because a couple of guys had to report to the military. I totally forgotten that during the late 60s, guys were coming back and forth. I mean, Kenny Holzman, Matty, please look this up. I'm going to say 1967. He was in the National Guard, and he came and he pitched every Monday or Sunday at Wrigley Field. He came and pitched. I don't even know if he came to road games, but he was 9-0 in his rookie year because he was in the National Guard.
By the way, WGN became one of the first local television stations to offer a limited schedule of live programs in color. Can you guess what year?
I'm going to say like 65.
Russell?
I would go 164.
1957.
Wow.
Wow.
You know, I'm gonna
Bozo in color.
You know what? I'm gonna lob one out there, and we'll never be able to check this one. I'm gonna say that color TV was invented before black and white, the mechanism, and it just nobody could afford the TVs, and it took forever to be able to walk into to be able to produce them at a decent price.
A quick Google search says color TV was invented December 1953.
Okay, so it would have been later then. All right.
So I don't know.
Wow, I'm talking about Dan jumped right on that.
I was talking about the mechanism. Where
the mechanism, just looking at this, dates back to maybe 1946, it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I remember my uncle told me he had a bar, 71st in California, and the first TV they bought so people could watch the game during the day, the bars bought the first TVs. I think he said it was like $300. In 1948, for some, the things were round. Remember? Well, have you ever seen those? They were round, I think, and it was like 21 inch round.
So I can tell Chief had read this paragraph and somehow it stayed in his memory. But the story on Kenny Holzman, when he was with the Cubs in 1967, he served in the National Guard and was only available to play on weekends. He appeared in 12 games and had a 9-0 record. Through 2006, only four pitchers in baseball history were undefeated with more decisions. With his military obligations behind him, he became a strong second starter behind Fergie Jenkins, and the Cubs began being successful in the National League for the first time since World War II.
I didn't read a paragraph, Manny. I watched him.
Well, I know, but
unfortunately.
You remembered that.
Yeah.
But see, now somebody should have given that to Dusty Baker, because see how great he was with proper rest?
Yeah, God. Well, you know, the weird part was he was hard for him to stay in baseball shape. I remember him.
Oh, I'm sure.
In the sixth and seventh inning, they're going, he looks like he's out of gas. Those days, you're supposed to pitch 7-8 innings. I mean, you know, your bullpen was for
that, you know, that might have, it'd be interesting to see, and I'm sure that my cousin, the Reverend Rhodes, and yes, he is a reverend, who's big into all those stats, he probably could pull out very quickly what his average outing was, and maybe they sat him a little bit quicker than other folks.
Well, you know what I've been doing, Russell? This is how bad is this? I've been timing the pitchers in these old games. We pitch to pitch.
That's good.
So, I mean, sometimes I do that now. The relief pitchers in the seventh inning, they can be 30 seconds. Now, Matty tells me, because he knows more about this than me, that they're actually telling guys that they want them to throw 100 miles an hour to take an extra few seconds because your arm regenerates and you can...
The teams over the last 10 years, and this is documented, you can look this up, it's pretty interesting. It's ruining the game, but it is interesting. They have found that for every second that you add between a pitch up to a certain point, you add like 1/5 of a mile per hour to your fastball between pitches for relief pitchers. Now, there's obviously, you know, a cap to that, but point being that if a relief pitcher just went out there, like Chief said, and fired every 12 or 15 seconds like a starter used to do back in the 50s, they would be nowhere near in the upper 90s where they want to be. But by waiting 25, 30, 35 seconds, and then each second they can kind of get away with after that, they're able to recharge their arm between pitches and throw a little bit harder. And so they're purposely telling relief pitchers specifically to do that. They don't want starters to do that necessarily, but definitely relief pitchers. And you'll notice with starters, in a big pitch situation with, you know, guys on base, you know, late in the outing, they'll wait forever in between pitches to try to get every last little bit on whatever they're throwing.
The quickest I've seen so far, Rick Wise from the Phillies was 15 seconds. Greg Maddux is 13 and a half. Fergie Jenkins was under 11 between pitches.
It's crazy. I do think if for a starter, even in today's game, the quicker you work, the better you are. I absolutely, if baseball really cares, which they clearly don't, if they really cared about the length of the games, they would put a shot clock and enforce it. And that's it. And if you don't pitch within 20 seconds, then it's a ball. And you just keep, and you keep doing it until pitchers pitch within 20 seconds, and then there you go. The problem solved. I don't know why they don't do that.
Well, none of the batters left the batter's box.
Well, you'd have to.
And nobody wore a glove.
You'd have to, enforce the amount of step outs in the box as well.
I think they need to do something because
I mean, if you really cared, you can fix it.
Well, what about we only got 30 seconds? What about football, Matty? The college football, there's 12.
That's just commercials.
But it's 12 minutes of action. But I mean, it's 12 minutes of action. How far can the time slot go? Can it be 6 hours?
People love football. College football, if you're not drinking with friends, is almost unwatchable. Well, it's like a 4.5 hour game.
Yeah.
Like you said, with 12 minutes of action. NFL at least keeps it right at 3 hours or
3:50,
maybe
3:10,
but it's nothing more than that. College football.
I'm going to say college football is at least 20 more plays than a pro game.
Well, the clock stops after first downs, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, even if it's just to reset the chains, but you do that every single time. I mean, that adds 10 minutes.
Yep. S&P futures up 18. NASDAQ futures up 30. We're just going up every day here. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie's Mr. Mel Weber. Mr. Russell Rhodes with us as well today, as he is every Wednesday. S&P futures now up 17.50. There's not a seller anywhere. NASDAQ futures up 24. Dow futures up 229 over in Europe. The recent beneficiaries of $1 trillion. $1 trillion was a lot further in Europe than it does here. I'm almost jealous. We have to do $3 trillion to get our market to go up here. DAX up 273, 2.2%. FTSE up 70, 1.1%. CAC around up 95, 2%. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 288, 1.3%. Shanghai up 1, let's call that flat. Hang Seng up 329, 1.3%. Didn't the guy in Britain say they would offer, how many million visas to people in Hong Kong that wanted to come live in Britain? Maybe I just saw that yesterday. That's wild.
I did not see that.
That was your buddy Boris Johnson. 10-year, 0.71 up three basis points today, the 10-year yield. One minus 0.38, so that's three basis points to the positive as well. And Japan almost a 0.01 or 0.009 positive. Oil down 7 cents now only, was down more than that earlier. 36.74. Brent down 31. 39.26. Natural gas up 5 cents. $1.83. RBOB 110. So long. Buck 85 gas. Gold down 9.20 now, 17.20. Silver up down 6 cents, 18.20. Copper up another penny, 2.50. I've been trying to get sneaky along some copper stocks yesterday, and I didn't dive in as hard as I should have, but maybe today I will. Who knows? I don't want to pay up for this stuff, so I'm kind of being Mr. Chiseler on these things, man, because I'm not a huge believer, but I think if the world is getting a little bit better, you want to get along some copper here, probably. Probably. How's that for a word? What do you got for us, Travis Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The concern of the morning has been on I-355. It's been closed for the better part of an hour on the northbound side between Butterfield Road and Roosevelt Road. It's now backed up to Ogden due to an overturned tanker truck that crashed earlier this morning. The truck is on its side and on fire. The tank is carrying a full load of propane, so not a good situation. Crews are on the scene. Traffic is miserable on I-355, the tollway there out in the western suburbs. So you'll want to avoid that if at all possible.
The not sure you're side safe on the other side of the road there either.
Yeah, the other side is moving very slowly and not good either, but it's at least getting by. The northbound side completely blocked. Everything else is okay out there from the expressways. It looks like no issues on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Stevenson and Eisenhower are all quiet. Edens and Kennedy are quiet too, as is Lakeshore Drive, and all of the downtown exits appear to be open this morning, so if you're heading into downtown or trying or considering going into downtown, you can get into downtown today, so that's a good start. Only other crash in the area is up in the northern burbs, US 41 at Deerfield Road.
Weather today, lots of clouds, could have some showers, cooler than it's been the last couple of days, a high of just 75. Right now it's overcast and 71, still dry but rain in the area. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and scorching today, a high of 110. Right now it's clear and 88. Chief.
Hey, speaking of...
It's raining in the Clarendon Hills Hinsdale area. There.
It's heading our way.
Heading our way.
Yes, it is. It's heading. I'm sending it to you. If you hear a dog freaking out in the background,
yes,
that's because you know she's trying to make the rain go away, and eventually she wins.
That's yes. Nice of her.
Every time.
Yeah.
They some dogs don't like the weather. Others don't seem to care.
My dog's never cared about thunder or the weather. He cares about a lot of stuff that's weird, but he didn't care about that for some reason.
I have a strange dog story when it comes to that stuff. Of course, we always had strange dogs. We had. This mutt that my uncle gave to us, he lasted 17 and a half years, which is a lot in those days. He never had a problem with the weather at all. And the Palm Sunday tornado in 1967 came right near our house. And we knew it was raining, and all of a sudden you kind of, even humans, me being human, felt it. The dog went bonkers. I mean, what's the drop in barometric pressure in a tornado? Russell, it's like incredible, right?
Oh, well, you can feel it. I grew up where where tornadoes were kind of a common thing, so I know exactly what happened. The temperature drops, and if you're sensitive to it, you get a headache almost immediately. But I think animals pick up on that stuff much better than we do.
Well, he just jumped up and started barking. He didn't know what he was barking about, and he must have been four for the rest of his 17 years. If it drizzled, he became a puddle, shaking on the sofa in your lap. Totally different dog. That thing missed our house by. Matter of fact, we moved into a different house in Evergreen Park. If we'd have been in that house, it would have come right down our street. It absolutely buried. This is the one. It hit Oak Lawn High School. It hit Beverly Country Club. Beverly Country Club's at one of the highest points in the city, and once it hit there, it never touched down again because there's a big hill there going into the city. Well, it's. Evergreen, Beverly Country Clubs is Chicago, right? So by Beverly, you know, the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, I've been to that country club.
Well, but I mean, if you look east of there, it drops by a couple hundred feet. So
it's like the only hill in Chicago.
Yeah.
Like big hill.
The highest point in Chicago is, what, 88th and Western or something, or 89th and Western. The tornado never dropped down after that and anything in the city. I mean, it must have gone went back up or just didn't go back down. But anyway, his life was changed when that thing went by. He's like, I don't want to feel that again, whatever that was. anyway, Russell, I got this thing on my phone last night, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with the virus and how these guys from, you ever hear of an outfit called Ars Technica?
No.
And they've been working on this genome now forever. And now they're convinced that it did not come from the Wuhan wet food market in the sense that it jumped from an animal in the market, that the market became the first hot spot to where the virus got spread.
Okay.
So
I could totally do that.
And they're saying it is virtually all a virus that came from a bat. But it somehow jumped. They couldn't figure out why that virus all of a sudden became nasty to humans. It turns out in the middle of the virus now, there's some different proteins that they found in pangolins. A pangolin is some weird looking creature over in China, and they claim that the addition of those proteins in the middle is what caused it to become contagious to humans. Is that wild?
It's wild, but. Does that help them fix it?
No, it just says that they can't believe it doesn't happen. It says they can't believe it doesn't happen more often. I mean, I guess it does happen, and it doesn't bother us. You know, the virus.
I have a funny feeling that things get passed on, and it gets passed off as a really bad flu. I think the problem this time was just that this one gets spread a little bit in a more stealth way. And the way it gets spread, it multiplies before people realize that they even have it and isolate themselves.
Well, it's more contagious
but
for sure.
I think it does happen a lot is what I'm going to.
Well, of course I've got stuff from, you know, people who write in all the time. And now the latest is that the, it was never as bad as people said it was. And now it's the point where they should be telling people that, you know, go about your business, and some people are still going to get it and whatever, because the numbers, well, of course, you know, depending, you always tell whatever numbers people send you what their point of view is, right?
Yeah.
But by and large, I mean, here's one of the gentlemen, sends a lot of stuff in for the show. I'll take it up here in a second. It has to do with the, yeah, but it comes down to, I mean, we all know, I mean, every life, you know, is important for sure. If it's your grandmother or something or other, anybody you know, it's, you know, the question, are these deaths COVID coincidental, or are they caused by COVID? Because the Hey Jackass down there, they're tracing this to the average age of people died of COVID, 79.
Yeah. My feeling is anybody 80 or older, and I lost my father within the last year, who was 84, is, you know, it's sad, you miss them, but they probably led a very good and long life. You know, and I don't mean to, and I lost a grandmother to this thing who was 101. So, yeah, and it's kind of the same thing. She, you know, if it wasn't that, it was probably going to be something else in the near future.
Well, this is, I'll go through this real quick. New York, now this guy, of course, he's got his agenda, tried to manipulate their corona deaths. New York heart attack deaths have dropped by half since last year. Okay, all right. Leading me to believe that they shifted a large number of heart attack deaths to corona deaths. I believe their motive was the bounty for corona deaths passed into law by Congress. These numbers, 2017 contagious influenza deaths were 62,000. 2020 contagious corona deaths, he thinks it'll reach 124,000. So roughly double. So the conclusion is, so yes, corona deaths are bad, like very bad, but not anywhere near Harvard's forecast of 1.5 million deaths. Mm-hmm. And yet now we're talking about, they approved a $3 trillion corona bill, and the Federal Reserve has spent $3 trillion on junk bonds from companies like Hertz that is now bankrupt. So in 3 months, his corona shutdown has cost approaching $6.4 trillion. And the yearly budget of the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines is $650 billion. So we're talking 10 years.
10 times that.
10 times that. Now, I mean,
what I want to really see, and of course it's going to be 2-3 years after the fact, but we know on average how many people die a day in the world. It's around 150,000 people. And I want to see if that number spiked up from, I don't know, February through right now, or if it was pretty much the same. And I think that'll give you an idea as to, you know, if this was true or not. Now, I personally think there was some truth to it. My wife's a healthcare worker. She knows a lot of healthcare workers. And she said if it weren't for talking to those people that she knows, that she would have more doubt than she does about the severity of this whole thing.
Well, there's no doubt in nursing homes. I mean,
yeah,
they've been eviscerated.
No, there's no doubt. But I don't want to come across as sounding cavalier about this. I really don't. But do you think that there's ever a period where I'll go back to my dear Gam down in North Florida. The two times that I visited her. Both times that I visited her, and she was in a place where you would go through levels of how much you could take care of yourself, and she was not ever at the top level where they basically were never getting out of bed and they were feeding you every day. But in the area that she was in, every time I visited her, they were cleaning somebody's room out because they had passed away.
Yep.
And there are only a couple hundred people in this place. So, you know, during a normal flu season, does that number accelerate normally?
Yes.
You know, in those types of places?
Yes.
I don't know. I really don't know.
I'm going to say yes.
I'm sure it probably does. I'm sure that there's a seasonal, if you wanted to dig in there and run all the numbers, there's a seasonal factor around when people pass away in nursing homes.
Well,
and it's probably worse in the wintertime.
The
you can attribute it to maybe they don't get outside as much in the wintertime or whatever, but I don't think every single death that we're attributing to the coronavirus has been the coronavirus.
Well, I look at the thing, Kevin brought this to mind years ago, man, when we first started the show. He was talking about in the new Twitter world, well, it was Twitter back then, but Facebook world, things become events and they take on lives of their own without really any sort of logic to them whatsoever. If something is an event, it just is. He says, well, Samardzija, he's been pitching in Major Leagues forever, but he used to pitch Notre Dame once in a while when he was on the football team. Kevin said you get this massive Facebook rush of Jeff Samardzija's pitching tomorrow, like it's the place to be. And there'd be 5,000 people, students would show up, because you couldn't be in the dorm. Hey, what's the matter with you, Russell? Didn't you get your Facebook? We're supposed to be over. It's an event. The next day, Matty Weber's pitching, and there's five people in the stands. It's not like anybody loved baseball. So we're getting this incredible, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what the mechanism now is. I'm going to say this thing leads you to believe that coronavirus is twice as bad as the regular flu. It shows somebody's, shall we say, agenda. I'm going to say, in my opinion, it's five times worse than a regular flu. I think it's going to come up being, because I think he picked 2017 because it was a very bad year. Would you suspect that, Matty? Why would you pick 17 and not 18
or
16?
Yeah, you got to do a sample size.
Yeah.
Do 10 years, do 25 years, whatever.
So I think my number is more accurate. It's five or six times worse. But what I would like to see in people, and put down your cell phone and your camera and your tweet for a second. What does it take to become a crisis? When are we going to shut things down? Is it five times? Is it four times? Is it 10 times? This needs to be somewhat of a debate that we don't seem to be able to have these days. I mean, and I'm not, and the same thing happens with this, the protests that are going on now. What happened in Minnesota is horrendous. But horrendous things happen in this country every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
This one is more horrendous because it was a guy in power, a guy we're paying salary to do something this lousy. So I get that part. I mean, I chill every time I see the damn thing. But out of all the things that happen in this country, this is one that millions of people have focused on versus, I'll bet you could, in the last 5 days, there's been five other worse police events.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure and we're seeing them.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, everybody is really fixated on that right now.
And there's an awful
lot. And we shifted very quickly from fixated on don't leave the house and, and don't spread germs and whatnot to a different topic.
Well, how do we shift?
It's amazing how quickly the world narrative shifted. And I'm not saying, when you say something like that, it almost sounds like you think there's some sort of conspiracy behind.
No, I think
that's
think
not
it
what
just
I'm
flares.
Saying. It's just that, our fixate, the daily press conferences from JB have, the topic totally shifted.
Yeah.
It turned on a dime.
What's the rationale?
As far as that one cop goes, you know what the good that might come out of this is? Is that you just? I hate to blanket this one, but you just looked at that guy and you're like, he is not somebody that you would want to show up to help resolve a domestic dispute at your house.
Oh God, no.
He just did not look like a good guy at all. And you gotta assume that other people on the Minneapolis police force probably. If anything, we're probably intimidated by him because how many complaints did this guy have?
Yeah, I'm almost more disgusted with the three officers that stood there the whole time
for
9 minutes.
But here, I've been thinking that one through, and one of my favorite sermons at my church, and I always would apply this one to being a floor trader, was to get along, you need to go along. And unless you get a whole group of police together and say, and everybody as a group goes to whatever power it be and goes, this guy needs to be behind a desk because he's going to kill somebody. I think the likelihood of that happening has increased dramatically. and the ability of other, you know, the ability of those three guys in the exact same situation, not today, because today's a volatile situation, but 3 or 4 months down the road, you know, generally, I feel like you can always have an idea at some point, a bad guy like that is gonna do something that's just, that you wish you had prevented ahead of time.
Right. And there's also, if you watch, you know, Chicago PD, and, you know, and obviously the sergeant in there doesn't like to play by the rules as the rules are written, shall we say. I think a lot of people have this feeling, and obviously not this guy because he didn't even do anything, have this feeling that there's some really, really bad people out there on the criminal side, and somewhere buried in the department you need to have a couple of people that are just as badass as them. I mean, you're not gonna go to war with the Japanese that just bombed Pearl Harbor with pop guns.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some people that have, in the city that have, you know, maybe have murdered 5 and 6 people and wounded others,
yeah,
and their arrest is not gonna go lightly.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean.
No, one of the big issues in Chicago is I think they only have they only charge somebody in less than 20% of the murders in Chicago every year.
15%.
I was making sure I was correct when I threw that 20% number out there, and I check the Hey Jackass site every once in a while as well. You know, and I definitely don't want to defend what the guy in Minneapolis did, but you've got to, there's a bit of self-preservation that comes into play when you end up in a volatile situation. Now your knee on somebody's neck, that's just freaking ridiculous.
But it comes down to,
if you're approaching somebody that might have a weapon, especially in Chicago, it could be it's either me or him.
Well, you know, I think a lot of that comes down to, and again, I never learned much from my dad since he died when I was 4. My mom would tell me stuff about when he was on the force, and it was, she said one of the things you would do is you never pull your gun except to shoot it. You don't walk up to a car with the thing in front of your face, because some movement, you might make a mistake. So you don't do that. So when the coordination of the Chicago police, I think, are not very good. If you want to pull somebody over on the expressway, now the state police do that, and it's some car that you suspect is, you know, there's guns in there, it's 3 a.m. on a Saturday, the people are going white or black, 100 miles an hour, I think you pull them over and you call for backup.
Yeah.
And you have 8 people there. I mean, that's why, did Lori and Jay, there was a report somewhere, and I was a coroner commissioner or whatever it was, if you want to stop a riot, when it starts, you meet it that you think is going to be bad, a riot, not a protest. When it starts, you meet it with overwhelming force. Not to beat up on anybody or anything, but if there's 1,000 people show up and you think they're bad actors, you have 3,000 cops and you say you're not going that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't let things get out of control where you're chasing it for 3 days.
Yeah.
Because somehow or another, you know, you agree with the fact that it's a peaceful protest, which 80% of it was. But as a mayor, you've got to be worried about the other 20%, not the 80. Because these things, the longer they go, they tend to get out of whack. They always have.
Yeah.
So as the 9 o'clock protest makes it to 1 o'clock and nobody goes home and it's 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock, you should know you have a problem. And man, you should have known 5 hours earlier.
Yeah. Our current mayor claimed that she had a plan going into all of this. I don't think she had a plan.
I don't think she had
a
plan for it.
I think she was really surprised.
I think that she is a serious sympathizer with the legitimate protesters, which am I.
Yeah.
And somehow felt that because somehow or other it's not going to get out of hand. But, I mean, I couldn't believe I think they probably tricked this lady on Channel 9 on Sunday. They're talking to the mayor of Calumet City. Lady, I could tell she's white or black, doesn't make any difference. And they're showing films of people looting this liquor store. They're pulling their cars up. It's white and black. didn't matter. I mean, it was all Hispanic. It was the hat trick. Everybody taking turns, you know, loading cases of beer in their truck. And, you know, people don't care about, they know they're being filmed. They don't care. I mean, the incredible disrespect for any kind of authority. I mean, they had no thought whatsoever that, like, today somebody's going to show up with a squad car or two in front of somebody's house and say, hey, that's the car that was in front of this place looting. Here you are on film. Here's your bill for what you took, and your bill for the piece of the place you broke. Are you going to give me the check, or are you coming down to jail with me? That needs to happen, Russell. It's not going to.
Oh, I know. There's no repercussions, or as John Wick would put it, there's no consequences.
All right. So you got 5 seconds. When is the market going to figure out that it's just money coming in, and people are going to get weary?
June 17th. There.
All right, you got it. S&P futures up now, 19.50. NASDAQ futures up 50. That's easy. Be right back tomorrow morning, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.